I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
And today we're talking about persimmons.
We are. I am sitting in my closet, in fact, with a cutting board, a very ripe Hachia persimmon, a spoon, and a knife.
Wow. That's a really evocative image. It's sort of... like if your closet, we thought of your closet as a cave, it's sort of like a prehistoric image. I mean, except for the cutting board.
Maybe. Yeah. It's just me in my fur.
Yes, yes.
My fur mini dress.
Yep, that's what she wore in Clan of the Cave Bear, right?
Yep. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to eating this. I have been carefully ripening this persimmon for like 5 days now. So here we are, Matthew. Let's
have you been
do
hand
this.
Ripening it? I don't know if that's a phrase that's ever been used, but it sounds like something an intolerable, natural foods website would use.
Well, we're going to actually talk a little bit about hand drying persimmons.
Oh, yes. No, I'm on board with that. I just
like
want something to hear
like
described as hand ripened.
Okay. Wait, Matthew, before we get started, well, number one, Happy New Year to everybody.
Yeah, that's, if you're listening to this on the day it comes out, it's New Year's Eve.
Well, and if you're listening to it after it's come out, Happy New Year.
Yes. But if you're listening to it on the day it comes out, we're going to sing Auld Lang Syne in its entirety, starting right now.
Should old acquaintance be?
All right, scratch it.
Okay.
Who are you going to kiss on New Year's Eve?
I think I might kiss my spouse. Isn't that hot?
Yeah, I mean, that's a... Well, it may be like the expected choice. It can be just as fiery. And it's a great way to start the year off right.
Matthew, you have been kind enough to allow me to promote my upcoming workshop on our show.
Yes. I mean, you make it sound like I'm the boss of the show, which is not the case. But
No, I'm the boss of the show.
Yes. You know how we were going to do a sitcom based on Spilled Milk and nobody was interested in that idea? We should have called it Who's the Boss?
Oh, that's such a... Oh, my God.
And
who thought of that? That's such a good idea.
I'm like a hunky handyman and I move into your house?
Yes. Oh my God, I love this. This is going to be a big hit.
Okay. Or if the show doesn't work out, could I just move into your house? I need a place to stay.
You'll have to sleep in June's old twin bed, which we now keep downstairs.
All right. That sounds funny.
Okay. Great. On January 24th, I'm going to be teaching a online writing workshop. It's 2 hours. It is going to be on my particular approach to transforming memories into scenes and stories. So you can join us by going to mollyweisenberg.com/upcoming. The workshop's called From Memory to Story, and it's going to be super fun. And we're going to do some writing. We're going to be some talking. You know, I always be talking.
Okay. So, yeah. So sign up for that. mollyweisenberg.com/upcoming. It's very reasonably priced. Maybe next time I should be the one who sells the workshop. I'm also doing a workshop. It's about writing spec scripts.
I'm usually a little bit more coherent than that, but you're welcome.
No, it's going to be terrific. I wish I could join.
You can, Matthew.
Okay, great. Okay. Should we talk about persimmons?
Let's talk about persimmons. Let's start on memory lane. I don't really have a persimmon memory lane.
I don't really have a persimmon memory lane either. I feel like I knew that persimmons existed long before I ever tasted one, probably because I was like reading food writing.
Yes. And persimmon pudding seems to be sort of a storied thing. Like I feel like it shows up in all sorts of Christmas and winter tales.
Like from England specifically? Or is this like an American thing too? Anything with pudding in it sounds very British to me.
Yes. Well, you know, interestingly enough, I, in my research, didn't really find anything about the UK and persimmons. But
okay, because I imagine there being like an Elizabeth David book called A Persimmon Pudding and a Mug of Glog or something.
I hope there is. Anyway, yes, I'm sure. I'm not sure, but I'm guessing that they make persimmon pudding in the UK. But you know, I think it's actually, it's maybe more of an American thing.
Okay.
Yeah, because there are some persimmon types that are native to the US, and I don't believe there are any that are native to Northern Europe.
No, I think it's just the word pudding threw me off.
Yeah, that's true. Let's start referring to desserts as puddings now. Let's become real Anglophiles.
Okay, I've got a fork in my non-dominant hand right now.
Perfect. You're well on your way. Okay. That said, I remember always feeling like I wasn't going to like persimmons. Like I was not interested in trying them. Like this is part of my memory lane in case you hadn't noticed. I was never very interested in trying persimmons. And as an adult, I've come to like them, but I don't get excited about them. What about you?
I would tend to agree, although I really enjoyed especially the soft and juicy persimmon that I ate a couple days ago in preparation for this episode. So I think I'm sort of starting to lean into the persimmon phase of my adulthood.
That sounds wonderful.
Doesn't it?
I have saved my soft and juicy persimmon to eat with you this morning, as you know. So maybe I'll join you, you know, in that new phase. We'll find out here in a few minutes.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna write a memoir called the persimmon period or the persimmon phase, and I don't really know how to write a memoir, so I'm gonna go to a workshop.
Perfect. I know just the one for you.
Okay.
Okay, Matthew, can I share with you some of my research?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Because I know I was a little nervous about this episode because I know much less about persimmons than I feel like I should as a food person.
Well, I actually could not believe how interesting persimmons were. We'll see if that transfers to our show here today, this feeling that I have that persimmons are interesting. I don't know if I can do it justice, but here we go. Okay, so there are many different species of persimmon. I did not expect this.
Different
many
species, different. Wow, okay.
Yes. The most widely cultivated by far is Diospyros kaki.
Oh, from the Japanese word for persimmon, I assume.
Yes, and actually around the world, kaki, is that how you say it? K-A-K-I. It is a much more widely used word than persimmon. So in French, for instance, persimmon is kaki.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
So anyway, Diospyros kaki is the most widely cultivated species. It's also sometimes called the Japanese persimmon, the Asian persimmon. But interestingly enough, the word persimmon itself, the word that you know we use in English, derives from the Algonquian language Powhatan. Am I saying that right?
I think so.
Which, you know, is a language from the eastern U.S.
Yeah.
And in this language, the word persimmon is related to the word for a dry fruit.
Do you think that means that like the fruit in its like fresh picked state is not that juicy, or that it's a fruit that's good for drying?
I have no idea, but I think it could be any of those.
Could
things.
Be either of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Persimmons are berries. I mean, I think of them, think of them kind of like a tomato. They kind of look like a tomato, right?
Yes.
They're berries, botanically speaking. They're the fruit of a persimmon tree. And this fruit matures late in the fall, and it can stay on the tree for a pretty long time, like until winter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And ripe fruits range in color really widely, depending on the species. So sometimes they're kind of a light yellow orange when they're ripe. Sometimes they're almost black. It's
wild. I think of them, like, I think the range of persimmons that shows up, like, in American grocery stores is pretty small, right?
It is. We really only get two different types of Diospyros kaki, and we'll get there in just a sec. But they also vary widely in size, too. Like, some of them are only half an inch. Like, seriously, like a little berry.
Whoa.
And some of them,
like a kumquat persimmon.
Yes, yes. And some of them get up to, like, 3.5 inches in diameter.
And some of them get up to no good.
Yes. Yes. Those are the really fun, crazy, wild
those
persimmons,
are the persimmons
you want to hang
I want
out
to
with
spend
on the weekend.
My New Year's Eve with.
Yes.
oh, yeah, your fun weekends with Molly. Yeah.
Anyway, sometimes they're spherical. Sometimes they're kind of acorn or heart-shaped. And
yes.
Some of them are more like pumpkin or tomato-shaped. I think this is kind of interesting. You know, usually when we pick a fruit, whether it's a tomato or an apple or whatever, the calyx, like the leaves that are right at where the stem meets the fruit, it doesn't necessarily stay on the fruit after it's picked, right?
Right.
Whereas with persimmons, the calyx stays on the fruit after harvesting. I think it's like just sort of part of how it's built. And the calyx then becomes very easy to remove as the fruit gets riper and riper.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, it was easy to remove.
Mm-hmm. So commercially and in general, persimmons can be divided into two categories, astringent and non-astringent. And
oh, just like people.
Exactly.
Which of us would you say is the astringent host and which is the non-astringent host?
I feel like we kind of go back and forth.
Yeah. I kind of want to be the astringent host.
I feel like sometimes I'm the astringent host, but
I think the astringent host would be the one who's like sort of like has like a dry English sense of humor, right?
Yes.
I want that to be me. It's not. But
it's not me either.
Okay.
Oh, good. It's neither of us.
All right. We're just a couple of non-astringent persimmons doing our thing.
So, you know, back to this most common species, Diospyros kaki, is native to China, Japan, and Korea. And there are many cultivars within this species.
Okay.
Among them being the two ones that you and I know, Hachia and Fuyu.
Mm-hmm.
So Hachia is the roughly acorn or heart-shaped one. And then Fuyus are kind of the more squat, like pumpkin or tomato-shaped one. And these are the two types you usually see on the U.S. market. So one of these is astringent and one is non-astringent. Matthew, do you know which one is which?
I do. I thought the game was going to be harder than this. The Hachia is the astringent type persimmon.
Yes. So what this means is that this particular type has a really high tannin content. So when it's unripe, the fruit is like wildly astringent, bitter, chalky. It'll like really make your mouth feel dry. But as the fruit ripens, you want it to get all the way to water balloon texture.
Yes.
But as the fruit ripens, the tannin content drops. And so you do not want to eat these puppies when they are not yet fully ripe. Wait till they become like water balloons and the flesh will be like jelly-like, surrounded
by a
thin skin.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just remembering this. Did you run across the quote from Captain John Smith about astringent persimmons? I think I first encountered this in Harold McGee.
I think that it's about the Diospyros virginiana, the American persimmon, which we'll get to in a minute. But yes,
oh, okay.
I did encounter it, where he talked about how unpleasant it is to eat when unripe.
It will draw the mouth awry with much torment.
Yes. Yes. Anyway, okay. Fuyu, on the other hand, which are the squatty pumpkin-shaped ones. Are a non-astringent cultivar. So it doesn't mean that they don't have any tannins at all, but they're much less astringent before ripening. And then as they begin to ripen, they lose their tannic qualities much more quickly.
Okay.
So you can eat these either firm, at which point they have kind of a delightful, like almost apple-like kind of crunch, or like a firm apricot almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not
fibrous. I agree. Firm apricot.
Yeah. Or if you wait until they are more like soft and ripe, they're also delicious, but it's a little bit more of like a mushy texture, like a soft apricot, but not fibrous.
Yeah. Mine I would say was kind of medium ripe.
Mm-hmm.
That was very tasty.
Yeah. And Fuyus are seedless, but they do have these, what do you call those little, if you cut across it, like across its equator,
okay.
It's got this beautiful design on the inside. Did you notice that?
I mean, what you're seeing is like the walls of the ovaries of the plant.
Oh, is that it?
That have like fused into a fruit, I think.
Okay. Well, anyway, it's beautiful. I don't usually take a fruit like an apple and cut across its equator.
No, I don't usually do that either, unless I'm playing Fruit Ninja.
But it was really beautiful to do that with my persimmon, my Fuyu, to cut it into thin slices that way. Really pretty.
Oh, that does sound nice. Now, I just kind of sort of shaved chunks off of mine and ate them.
Mmm. Okay. So, yeah. Remember, both of these are Diospyros kaki, okay?
Yes.
But
I'm glad we just realized, like, I was hoping one of us would be astringent and one would be non-astringent, but it turns out that, like, you're a thin slicer and I'm a chunk shaver.
I think that is just as good, really.
Yeah, as long as we can, like, divide ourselves into two categories that we can go to war over.
Oh, perfect. I don't want to be, you know, listeners love it when we have our fiery
conflicts,
rants and tirades and conflicts. So this is what it's going to be. Thin slicers or chunkers.
That's right. Have you ever listened to a podcast where the hosts really do like get into it and like get into big fights with each other? I feel like there's one podcast that I listen to where that has to happen sometimes, and it's kind of fun.
No, I never hear that.
I can't take very much of it, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, Matthew, can we talk briefly about some other species? Because
yes, I'd love to.
Because it's wild to me how different species of this same
fruit
are, or the same tree.
Well, tell me about them.
So there's one that is native to the eastern U.S. It's Diospyros virginiana, or the American persimmon. I've never seen these.
Do you know how the Japanese persimmon ended up becoming like the standard persimmons sold in the U.S. when there are Native American persimmons?
I don't.
Persimmons native to America.
You know, I don't know. You know, in truth, the American persimmon has, of course, been on U.S. soil far longer than any of these Japanese varieties, right?
I mean, I assume it must have something to do with, like, you know, these are the ones that were easy to domesticate and put into mass production.
Well, and also, I do know that it was quite a while ago that cultivars of Diosporus cocci were brought to California, and they were grown there. And of course, since there's so much agriculture in California, I can see how this could have quickly become dominant.
Sure. And of course, there's a long history of Japanese and Japanese American farmers in California who would have been growing persimmons.
Yeah. So anyway, the American persimmon, just like these other ones we've been talking about, can be eaten fresh or in baked goods. And persimmon trees are also often used for their wood, which is really hard.
Oh.
So the timber of the American persimmon is sometimes used to make musical instruments.
Oh, so like you can get like a persimmon, what's a musical
flute.
Instrument?
Flute.
A persimmon flute.
Let's say.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Let's say flute.
So then there's the Diosporus nigra, which is the black persimmon, and it's native to Mexico. The fruit has green skin and a white flesh that, as it becomes ripe, turns dark brown or black.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Then we've got Diosporus discolor, or I don't know how I'd pronounce that.
I think discolor.
Okay. This is sometimes called the mabolo, the Korean mango, or shizi in China. And it's bright red when it's ripe. Then we've got one that's native to West Bengal. It's the Diosporus peregrina, or the Indian persimmon. The fruit of this one is also green, but it's not known so much for cooking or eating. It's best known for its use in Ayurvedic medicine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then here's another American persimmon. This is the Diosporus texana or texana.
Oh, that's the one that has like a little hat. I mean, a big hat.
Yes. You find this one at rodeos sometimes.
Yes.
This is the Texas persimmon. It's native to Central and West Texas and Southwest Oklahoma. And also parts of Northeast Mexico. I've never seen this or heard of it until now.
I've never seen or possibly never heard of a persimmon other than Diosporus cocci.
Yeah. Anyway, this is so interesting to me that I grew up in a part of the country that has a native persimmon and I never heard of it. Anyway, this one is black on the outside and ripens a little earlier. It ripens in August. So
That's my birthday. I ripened in August.
You did. Congratulations.
Thanks. I mean, not this year, like many years ago was when I ripened and fell from the tree.
Mm-hmm. Did you still have your calyx attached?
Yeah, I did. They had to clip it.
Yeah, mine too.
Cool coincidence.
Okay. So anyway, Matthew, do you typically buy these things? And when?
No. And in fact, I think probably you can count the number of times I've eaten persimmon on one hand.
Yeah, me too.
And so I was going to go to the co-op, Central Co-op, to get persimmons. But then Lori mentioned that, let's call her Silots W, sister-in-law of the show, Wendy. Silots W is a pretty good name,
W?
Right? Isn't it? Does that sound like a robot in a dystopian sci-fi movie?
I feel like this sounds like something out of Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
There we go. So Silots W, a benevolent robot and also sister-in-law of the show, Wendy, was going to the co-op anyway and is a big persimmon eater and said, oh, yeah, I can pick you up some persimmons. How many of each kind do you want? I said, how about one of each? And she got me one Hachia and one Fuyu persimmon. And the
Matthew.
Hachia was already ripe and ready to go.
While you've been talking, I have been over here pulling off my calyx.
Okay.
And
right.
Cutting my Hachia persimmon in half from stem to stern.
Yep.
Hold on. I got to put my mic down to do this. I don't have a mic stand. Hold on. Okay. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm over here now.
Where is over here? We can't see you.
Hold on. I just scooped this out. I was a little bit worried when I cut into it that maybe I hadn't gotten it as ripe as I thought, because I kind of just thought the inside would like ooze out the second I cut into it. It didn't. but it's very easy to scoop out, and it is delicious. And it's so it's so mild. It's really a hard flavor to describe.
Yeah, I mean it's they're super popular in Japan, and like you can get, you know, I think if you want to really like zero in on what is the flavor of a persimmon, I would recommend picking up a pack of persimmon haichu.
Really?
Because it, I mean, well, it divorces the persimmon flavor from the texture, because they're very, like, you know, texture forward kind of fruit.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Hold on. I promise I'll pick up my mic again in a second. I'm just really enjoying eating this.
Okay. I'll vamp. I feel like you were a little worried about the prospect of digging into that soft and juicy hot chia persimmon.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a little daunting. It's hard to imagine what it's going to taste like in there.
Well, I think it's kind of the size and shape of a plum.
Mm-hmm. And no, it's bigger than that.
It's bigger. Well, plums come in, there are many different sizes of plums.
Well, I know, but even like a pretty big plum is smaller than this bad boy. This is more like, what is this like? This is easily tennis ball size.
Okay, I think your bad boy was bigger than my bad boy, because mine I would definitely say is like large plum sized.
You may be the first man in the history of the world who is willing to admit that your bad boy is smaller than someone else's bad boy.
That's true. That's a good point. What I was going to say is that, like, if you have more experience with eating plums than eating persimmons, like a plum that was as soft as a hot chia persimmon would be an overripe plum.
Yes, it would be bland and mealy and gross.
Yeah. So you want to take a hot chia persimmon further than you would take a plum.
Yeah,
you want to go all the way with it.
I do want to go all the way with this thing. So, yeah, I was a little bit hesitant, and I'm not anymore.
Okay, good. So now that you've tasted both, which one do you like better?
I think I prefer the hot chia.
Yeah, I think I do too.
I mean, the fuyu is delightful. So here's the thing. I think I prefer a fuyu that is still a bit crunchy, because what I don't love about the fuyu when it gets a bit soft is that, you know, the flesh has a really lovely, not mushy, but soft, juicy texture.
Mm-hmm.
But the skin is a little tough. You know, the skin on these babies is thin, but snappy, sort of.
Yeah, kind of thin and snappy.
And I didn't love in my mouth the texture of that, like, really delicious, juicy, soft flesh, and then this skin, because I didn't cut the skin off my
slices. I think you can skin them.
I could skin them. I wish that I had a not very ripe fuyu around to compare
I wish my ripe fuyus. Yeah.
Anyway, okay, Matthew, hold on. Here is a really, really hot button issue.
Okay.
Do you like your persimmons at room temperature or cold?
So I ate mine at room temperature, except for like the leftover fuyu that I threw in the fridge and then ate some cold. I'm usually a cold fruit kind of person. I think I would prefer cold. But at the same time, like a hot ripe hot chia persimmon has what I think of as like a creamy tropical fruit texture.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like, you know, in the realm of like true tropical fruits, there's like stuff like, you know, like what's the custard apple called? This is going to drive me nuts, because a carambola is a star fruit. That's not what I'm talking about. You know, there are fruits that are, you know, have a custard like texture and are like very like sweet and thick, but also like soft and gooey. Those, I think, on the whole, are better at room temperature or warmer than room temperature, because you're in the tropics. But so I might take my hot chia at room temperature and my fuyu cold.
Okay, I chilled both of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that our listeners don't like this about me.
No. Some of our listeners love cold fruit.
I love cold fruit. I mean, I love like a warm raspberry, like when you buy it and you eat it like in the parking lot of the store or the farmer's market or whatever. But Do you pay for it
before you do that?
You do. You pay for it. But I just instinctively refrigerated both of my persimmons once they were ripe. And I'm really glad that I did. I really like this cool persimmon. I can imagine this being delightful on a really hot day, but unfortunately, since they are a fruit that grows when it's cold outside, I probably won't get to experience that.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Anyway, Matthew, will you talk a little bit?
I mean, you could microwave them. Oh wait, you said eat them on a hot day. Never mind.
Yeah. So maybe what I should do is I should take like I sh- maybe I should um take like a really hot shower, crank up the heat.
Crank up the heat, yep.
Crank up the heat. So
sit on the radiator.
I really get that experience of being like sticky, kind of wet, humid skin. And then I eat my cold persimmon.
And then, you have your spouse come and feed you persimmons.
Yes.
That is New Year's Eve sorted.
You are welcome, listeners. Hope you've been ripening your persimmons.
Oh, you know our listeners have been ripening their persimmons. We can count on them for that.
Matthew, while I eat the other half of my hot chia persimmon, would you please talk about dehydrated or dried persimmons? Because this is a big thing in many parts of the world, particularly in Asia.
Yeah, it's a big thing, and I will talk about it, but I have to make an embarrassing admission first off, which is that I don't think I've ever eaten one.
Okay.
I know mostly about the Japanese version, but like, you know, throughout East Asia, China, Korea, Japan, Vietnam, there are traditional methods for drying persimmons outdoors, and it can be quite a labor intensive process. But it's like a kind of a premier dried fruit.
I also want to add that the varieties that are most often dehydrated are astringent varieties, like the hachia.
Yes, because the tannins are a natural preservative. Mm. So friend of the show, Sunoko Sakai, who has a wonderful book called Japanese Home Cooking. You know, she's famous for a lot of things. You know, she makes incredible homemade artisan soba. And, you know, she'll take anything and make it from scratch. But every year she makes hoshigaki, which are dried hachia persimmons or astringent type persimmons. And you pick them unripe, you peel them, you suspend them on strings on like a trellis. I don't know if this would technically be a trellis. And you massage them daily. And they get dark and get kind of like a powdery surface. Then they're eaten as a snack or used for making wagashi, which is Japanese traditional sweets. So I tried to get some because they do sell them at Awajimaya, and I just could not I could not get it together to get a trip to Awajimaya and before this episode, and I don't know if they would have actually had them in stock or not anyway. So maybe next persimmon episode, maybe next New Year's.
I'm really curious about what they taste like because hachia persimmons are it's a really delicate flavor.
Yeah, and you know, having talked about this now, I kind of want to try an unripe one just so I can like understand this experience of having my mouth drawn awry with much agony or whatever it was. I'm curious now. I mean, it's not going to kill me, right?
No, it's, well, hold on though, Matthew, because
no.
I've got some info about what it might do to you.
Okay, before we get to like horrible persimmon side effects that you need to know about. The thing I realize is we do this show every week. I just realized I don't know if you're aware of this.
Congratulations.
Like if I do get my hands on some hoshigaki and try them, I could report on this in a future episode and not have to wait all the way till next year. Why don't you remind me about this?
Okay, great. I'll try. Okay. Hold on. So in Japan, have you ever encountered tea that's made from like the dried leaves of Diospyros kaki?
I don't think so.
Because that's apparently a thing, too, in Japan and Korea. I was just wondering.
It does seem like I am the kind of person who would have run across that, but I don't think I have.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, so aside from, you know, eating these things raw, drying them, you can also make baked goods or steamed sweets using persimmon, particularly the puree of a ripe, or like, you know, the mushy, delightful inside of a hachia persimmon when it's ripe. David Leibovitz has some great recipes for persimmon cakes and persimmon breads. But what I found really interesting in reading about persimmon cakes and persimmon breads on the internet is like nobody really describes the flavor of it.
Huh.
Like, what does this stuff taste like?
Well, and it is a very mild flavor. Like I said, I think it's a texture driven food. Not that it's like flavorless, but you know, it's not like a bonk you over the head flavor. Like a, you know, what's a fruit that has a really strong flavor, like a raspberry
or a passion fruit?
Yeah, it's not in the raspberry or passion fruit family. It's more of like, you know, I want a comforting, sweet tasting kind of floral gush.
Gush, yes. Okay, so also persimmon pudding, of course. You make that using Hachia puree. Simply Recipes has a really good looking recipe for persimmon pudding.
Okay, we can link to that.
The texture, I've never eaten it. The texture looks a bit like pumpkin pie, but it's kind of served more like brownies, like cut into squares without a crust.
Okay, that's interesting.
Okay, but Matthew, here is why you should not eat unripened persimmons.
Okay,
Are
here we go.
Are you ready? I know we've talked about this biological phenomenon before. There is a particular tannin in an unripened persimmon that when it comes into contact with stomach acids can form a gluey mass. It's a particular type of bezoar called a phytobezoar, which just means that it's made mostly of like plant material.
Mm-hmm.
They are often very hard and almost woody in consistency.
So this is a bad thing, isn't it?
This is a bad thing. You can wind up with a hard and woody mass in your stomach that is a result of eating an unripened persimmon. So don't do that.
But like if I just taste one, it's not going to cause like a big ass bezoar, right?
No. But interestingly enough, more than 85% of phytobezoar, so more than 85% of like plant-caused bezoars are caused by unripe persimmons.
This must be, this feels like an old man thing to do, right?
Doesn't it?
Like, yeah. First of all, it probably takes a while to develop a big bezoar, but it's just like, you know, I like eating these things that that draw my mouth awry with much torment. Like, you know, I've been eating them for years. I'm not dead yet. Like, you know, try and stop me. And then an 85-pound lump of woody plant matter is removed surgically from your stomach.
Well, but apparently in parts of the world where persimmons are grown, there are sometimes, well, at least Wikipedia referred to it this way, as like epidemics of bezoars.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is this going to turn out to be more of like a sad thing when...
This
like,
is a sad episode.
Where like, it's just like people didn't have other things to eat besides unripe persimmons?
I think you're exactly right. Ding, ding.
I like the like a crotchety old man explanation better.
Yeah, me too. Okay, but anyway, I want to sort of wrap this up by talking a little bit more about the wood of persimmon trees.
I like that you feel that this is on topic for the show. Like I'm excited to hear about it too. Quite honestly, but like on the apple episode, did we talk about other things you can do with like the wood of an apple tree? Because the answer is pretty much anything.
Well, clearly I didn't do the research for the apple episode. Now did I?
Oh, that's true. I did because I made a bunch of funny apple. No, mm-hmm. I think that was the first time when it was just all real apple names.
Anyway, Matthew. So persimmon trees belong to the same genus as ebony trees. So anyway, they show up in a lot of like traditional Korean and Japanese furniture, the wood of a persimmon tree. And they're also pretty widely used in making wooden golf club heads, you know, which I guess you and I would know about if we had ever played golf.
No, but when this pandemic is over, let's head out on the links together.
Okay.
And shoot some, what do you do out on the links? Like hit some, let's go to the driving range.
Putt some balls.
Let's go to the driving range and putt some balls.
Persimmon wood is also often used in longbows.
Tin cup. Let's get it. Let's get a ball into the tin cup.
Okay. Anyway.
Longbows?
Longbows.
So this is a really
useful
wood.
There are so many different
wood.
Sports that we are going to take up when this pandemic is over. Archery?
Archery is fun.
Archery is fun.
Fired a bow? Is that what they call it?
Fired a bow. I did it in summer camp as a child. Yeah, and we used wooden bows and arrows. I remember the burn of the, whatever you call the string on a bow.
I think you call it the bow string.
Yeah, I remember like the friction burn of it. And I remember getting a splinter from the wooden arrow as it went whizzing past my finger.
I think I've only used like fiberglass arrows. Yeah, no, I want an old school longbow with wooden arrows that like, you know, breaks your arm trying to pull back the string.
You know, earlier in the pandemic, June found a piece of driftwood that was like perfectly bow shaped.
Oh, cool.
And so she and Ash spent an afternoon turning it into a bow and then making arrows. And then we put up like a cardboard target on the side of the house. And wow, that bow did not work well, but it was really fun.
Yeah. I mean, it was a good try, though. Like, I respect the endeavor.
Thank you.
Okay, anyway, so it's used to make golf club heads, longbows, and some wooden spoons, you said?
Yeah.
And furniture.
Yeah, and traditional Korean and Japanese furniture.
So, but when we head out on the links, as we often do, like we could be eating, like have a persimmon in one hand and a golf club in the other hand, whose head was made with wood from the same tree as the fruit that we're eating.
God,
think about
that's
that.
Amazing.
I don't think the timeline really works there.
I don't think so either. Wait, Matthew, I have an observation to share about my mouth.
Please. Is it being drawn awry with torment?
No. So I've now eaten about 3/4 of one Hachia persimmon. And my mouth has this really interesting feeling in it. So I can tell that there were tannins involved in this.
Oh, interesting.
Like, you know, sometimes after you eat or drink something tannic, it leaves like a lingering, it's not a feeling, it's not a flavor, but it's somewhere between a feeling and a flavor.
I know. Yes, I know exactly what you mean. It's sort of like a flavorful dryness.
Yes, I've got a touch of that.
Interesting.
Yeah, my mouth tastes really interesting. It's not bad.
Are you going to be concerned now about bezoars?
No, because this is a very ripe persimmon. Okay. So I think the amount of that, you know, that acid or what was the thing that turns
it was,
into
bezoars? It was the tannins.
The
right?
tannins. Okay, certain amount. I don't think we have enough of the tannins for a bezoar.
I hope you're right.
I'm counting up my tannins to see if I can buy a bezoar.
Won't you buy my bezoar?
Okay, Matthew. Hey, it's time for our new segment, Listener Mail.
Okay, this is from listener Kara, who asks, can you please try to make more references to / jokes about Keanu Reeves?
I am so grateful to listener Kara for loving the phrase Keanu Reeves as much as I do.
Yep. Do you remember what episode that was? I don't think it was a Peanut episode, was it?
No.
It might have been.
What was it? I bet listener Kara knows.
You know what? Like our listeners are very good at researching our back catalog in ways that we are not. So if you know the answer, like you can email us contact@spilledmilkpodcast.com, which is also a great place to ask us a question that could be used on a future listener mail segment. I came up with a name for the listener mail segment.
Okay.
What do you think of this? Spilled Mail.
Okay.
when I woke up this morning at like 6:15 and that was the thing that popped into my head, I'm like, oh, this is such a clever idea.
Oh my God. This is like me and every thought I've ever had middle of the night. Yes.
Like I've been working lately on writing original songs. I do not have anything to share because, and like, I know this is like the curse of like every creative person in every creative endeavor, but I've used the word endeavor several times on this episode. Mm. But like, you know, an idea pops in my head like, oh, this is a catchy tune. All right, I'm going to turn this into a song. And then like 30 seconds later, I'm like, oh, this is garbage. And I don't mean the band Garbage, which has many catchy songs.
What was your song about? You have to tell us now.
Well, like I need help with lyrics. I need to practice.
Oh God, Matthew, that's such a cop out.
Okay, so I wrote a song about that. I took two nightmares that I had recently and like made a verse about each of them, and then like a chorus about nightmares in general.
Okay.
All right. I'm not going to go into more detail than that.
Oh, fine. Okay. By the way, I'm really sorry you've had two nightmares lately. Wow, that's a lot of nightmares.
I have about one nightmare a month.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Do you,
that's
do
not
you,
terrible.
Do you have nightmares?
Not often, but when I do have them, they're sometimes really... Well, I'm told that I do a very quick running motion in my sleep when I have a nightmare. Like I run in place. And in my nightmares, I often am trying to yell something.
Oh, yes.
And I can't get it out. And I know this in my dream, and I'm very disturbed by it. But I often will wake Ash up with my noisy efforts to make a sound. In my dream, I'll be like, like that. Anyway, I had a dream sometime in the last year and a half or so that I rolled over in bed and crushed a baby owl.
Oh, that would be so upsetting in the dream. And it's so funny
so
now.
Much noise in the middle of the night. There was so much like weird moan wailing happening. Anyway,
oh yeah, that would be awful.
Anyway, yeah, that was a nightmare that was memorable.
Yeah. No, I just kind of cycle through the same ones. I mean, I've had a bunch lately. These are not really nightmare, but I keep having dreams where like I suddenly realize that I don't have a mask in a situation that definitely requires one.
Oh God. Yeah. Wow. Talk about a 2020
kind of
dream.
Very topical.
Yeah. Wow. That's intense.
And I often dream that I'm supposed to perform a concert and haven't practiced or prepared in any way.
Yeah. This all makes sense. My dreams are not this easy to read.
Oh, yeah. Mine are always like, you know, you do not need to dig up Freud to figure out what's going on here.
What do you think my baby owl meant?
Was this like around the time you went to the owl cafe?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, I think it's every parent's fear of like, you know, something like you're going to do something to ruin your child.
Yeah.
And I'm going to like separate those into two things. Like every parent has fears and also you are going to do something to ruin your child.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this all makes sense. I think that June is a baby owl and I'm afraid of rolling over on her in my sleep.
Yeah, and crushing her dreams and her small bones.
And her little, sweet little soft feathers.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. Okay,
you might want to get like take her in and have that looked at.
Okay, well, this has been another information-filled episode.
I enjoyed it very much. Thank you for doing the research.
You are so welcome. I didn't know what I didn't know about persimmons, and now that I do know what I didn't know, I'm glad I know it.
We have just enough time for a very brief episode of Cute Animals You Need to Know. Our cute animal you need to know this week is the baby owl that Molly crushed in her sleep.
Okay. All right. Well, our producer is Abby Circatella, and you can find us everywhere you already found us.
Yes. If you want to talk about the show with other listeners, a great place to do that is on Reddit, reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk.
Mm-hmm.
And until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk.
Do you remember there was a closing joke about snapping your tendons, which is kind of what I did to the baby owl.
Oh, yeah. That was,
I don't know, I mean, if owls have that tendons.
That is more vivid than necessary. And also, I think that joke was like over 400 episodes ago. But it's time to bring it back so that we can like leave people with the mental image of you destroying a helpless animal. So I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
Oh, I'm Molly Weisenberg.
I'm ready to talk about these simmies. That's what I call persimmons.
Really?
No. I just said that for the first time ever, and I don't like it.
Yeah, don't do that again.
Okay.
Okay.